Welcome to the Brainstorm, episode 92. Today we've got Daniel McGuire on the line talking about one of the most exciting futures out there, robotaxi. Daniel, I feel like we talk about this a lot. It's potentially finally happening, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. So maybe set the stage with what's happening, what you expect, and then we can let Nick tell us why he's skeptical.
Sure. So maybe to set the stage, in terms of last week, we saw for the first time driverless Model Ys in Austin, Texas, which is the first city Tesla plans to launch its robotaxi service on. At the same time, Elon confirmed they're targeting a date for June 22nd, which could tentatively move depending on safety, which is a wise thing, in my opinion, just given the history of the industry. We saw General Motors Cruise ultimately collapse because of a safety incident. But why is this such an important moment for Tesla? Well, firstly, it's a transformational in their business model. So they are going to shift from hardware sales of their vehicles to recurring revenue with software-like margins. So that obviously helps the business case for Tesla, but maybe just in terms of rollout. So we know initially it's going to be in a small vehicle fleet of maybe 10 to 20, but ultimately this will scale up to multiple cities by the end of this year and eventually millions of autonomous cars towards the end of next year and then further growth after that. So quite an exciting week for Tesla and a lot to look forward to, but I'm sure Nick has a lot to comment on. We can help educate the viewers.
Well, how did I get painted as the bear here?
Well, yeah, we can
just from Nick, one Nick, comment Nick believes, in the green room.
Nick believes just as we do in the robotaxi future, making it safer for humans. But we need a heel, otherwise
it's not entertaining.
Exactly. Well, you know, I can throw in the questions that I get all the time. Right, people say, "Oh, Waymo's already doing this, right? Geofenced area. So what's the difference between Waymo and Tesla in what they're doing?"
Yeah, sure. So maybe a quick Waymo versus Tesla comparison. And I think maybe it's helpful to do that on three fronts. So firstly, as it relates to data, so Tesla has a significant data advantage relative to Waymo. You know, we believe Tesla's gathering just under 10 million miles of full self-driving data per day. That versus Waymo's 250,000 per day. And, you know, why is this important? Well, firstly, it helps train their AI algorithms and helps them encounter the corner cases. And in fact, actually, Waymo just put out a paper last week which confirmed that they see with increased data and compute, the performance of autonomous vehicles improves. So that's like a case in point coming from Waymo that additional data is helpful. On the cost front then, so, you know, Waymo's vehicles is rumored to cost upwards of $180,000. And this is largely because of their complex sensors. They use a mix of LiDAR, radar, and cameras to help them negotiate their geofenced regions. In contrast, you have Tesla vehicles rolling off the line today, which can cost around $40,000 for a Model Y. You have the low-cost vehicle coming, starting to roll off the production line in the coming weeks, and that's forecasted to be sub $30,000 with EV credits. And then at some point in the second half of next year, you have the purpose-built Cybercab. So that has no steering wheel, no pedals, and that could be tending towards the $20,000 cost mark. So that's that advantage cost. And then just lastly, you know, yeah, it's cheaper to produce a Tesla vehicle, but, you know, when you compare how much they can produce versus Waymo. So Waymo gave a fleet size of around 1,500 currently and planning to add around 200,000 over the next year in what's not yet an automated assembly line. And in contrast,
Wait,
Tesla...
200,000?
No, 2,000. Sorry, correct.
Yeah, yeah.
2,000.
That's a
yeah, 1,500. Hoping to add 2,000. And for context, Tesla can produce 5,000 in a day. So yeah, between data advantage, cost, and production, you can tell that we're super excited for Tesla to launch its robotaxi service in the coming days. It's been a long time coming, so.
What odds would you place on the event actually happening this week?
Well, I don't think there's a quote event that's going to happen. I think it's just going to happen, right? It's like, I think it's starting, it's not like they're cutting a ribbon.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's happening. I think it's like starting with internal people, which has been in the past what's been going on, but with safety drivers, probably continue that with no safety drivers, then expand it to the public, and then go from there.
Yeah.
And so the day just, sorry, hold on. The day just marks what exactly? That it's going beyond just Tesla internal employees?
That's my understanding.
Are they rolling it out to then a select few individuals? Because it's only 20 cars, so it's not like they're going to launch an app.
Well, that has not been confirmed. The app already exists. It's the Tesla app that anyone who owns a Tesla has, and that will be updated. But as it relates to who's going to be in the vehicles, it's unclear yet whether it's going to be invite only or open to the broad public. I would assume it's going to be invite only, just given the limited fleet size initially. But again, to the point on scaling, this can scale quite rapidly, and Tesla are being quote-unquote paranoid about safety, which I think is a prudent approach to take.
And then I'm curious, because the story here has always been, this is me putting on my bear hat. The story here has always been, you know, you have a general technology with cameras, so you should be able to drop these cars anywhere in the world and they will be able to execute on the vision of autonomous ride hailing. But Tesla has been driving these cars essentially in circles around Austin for 6, 7, 8 months now. So clearly they're doing some refinement to the individual geographic area. And I think we've talked about it on this call as well. Like in one of the earnings, I believe, I don't know exactly who spoke about it, but there was fine tuning for geographic areas specific Austin. So I'm curious if that vision of, you know, general autonomous ride hailing is actually happening, or if this is more or less smoke and mirrors and it's actually just being refined exactly to Austin, and how, you know, how is that actually any different than what Waymo does?
Yeah, so I think for Austin initially, lots of fine tuning, but even from what Elon has said about the algorithm as well, is it seems like it's generalizable. On what they were saying, kind of a mixture of experts approach, it's like there's a baseline generalizable capability that should function anywhere, and then fine-tuned for geographic locations would make it even safer. And so it's like, you can imagine the baseline's already going to be safer than humans, and then when you're in a snowy area, having something that's fine-tuned on snowy conditions is going to outperform, rather than if it was last fine-tuned on, I don't know, San Diego, and it's not taking into account as much snow. So then it's like you take it without updating to a snowy area, and it's still capable because it's using the model logic of vision in, output out, but probably not as safe as something that was then fine-tuned. So I think, you know, is it smoke and mirrors? No. Is it hyper-focused right now, especially at the launch when all eyes are on them? Yes. Does that mean that it's not generalizable? No. So that's kind of my read on it.
Yeah. Maybe the follow-up question is, then how exactly do you get it to scale, right? Daniel, you mentioned in the beginning, like by the end of the year, this is going to be happening in multiple cities, but it's taken them this long to only put potentially 20 cars on the road in 5 days from now. So how do you go from that to within the next 6 months, multiple cities, hundreds of cars, if you had to do all of this just for 10 to 20 cars?
Yeah, you start and then I'll add on.
Yeah, sure. So one thing that's important is the size of the localization. It's not like a specific Austin localization where it's like the cars are going to Austin, they map the route, and then they're solely just operating in that. It's like the kind of the layout of Austin and the geographic region. It's not like the city itself. And the other point as it relates to scale is like I mentioned at the beginning of this call, Tesla is being super paranoid about safety. And like one accident here can push it back by several months from a regulatory standpoint. So in my opinion, rightly so, just being super cautious as it relates to safety. And then ultimately the data will show out that these vehicles are much more safer than humans. And then really, it's just a matter of the regulators looking at the data and reading it when they have enough at scale, which Tesla can do with its fleet, and then that can help accelerate into to multiple cities. And And maybe just lastly, before Sam, love to hear your thoughts, but on the generalizable point, there's videos of Tesla full self-driving operating in China without any kind of specific training within China. Tesla have said that they've been trained on YouTube vehicles or YouTube videos rather, because they just can't get access to export the data. So that gives a testament to the actual quality of the AI algorithm running. It's not a case of going to a region, mapping out the region, and then pressing go. It's quite a generalizable solution, and an element of safety is being considered when you talk about their rollout, in my opinion. But Sam, I'm curious to hear what you think.
Yeah, so I'd say there's a few things here. One, going from zero to one is different than going to one to N. And so it's like, okay, let's just say, even if they were to do exactly what Waymo's done, and we've seen, right, Nick, we went through the Mary Meeker deck. It's like Waymo's gaining share from Uber and Lyft in SF, even though it's expensive.
So but they are doing exactly what Waymo has done.
Right.
I guess that's my point. It's like, we're talking about how the strategy is different from what Waymo's doing, yet they're rolling it out in exactly the same way Waymo has rolled it out.
Right. So that's why I think it's such an interesting thing, because I think right now it would appear that that is the case, even though they're on two completely different trajectories. So it's like, I agree, in this first instance, right, it's like, it's small, it's geofenced, it looks like what Waymo is doing, but it's fundamentally different. The vehicles are a third the price, it's vision only, and like Tesla can actually manufacture vehicles. So it's like those three things, and kind of ties back to what Daniel said. It's like, yes, if you look right now and you were just to say, oh, small launch, geofenced, right? You'd say, oh, they're doing the exact same thing. And it's like, if they were doing the exact same thing, even as if that were the case, it's like Tesla could undercut Waymo's pricing. And we already saw from the Mary Meeker deck, Waymo's gaining share from Lyft and Uber. So it's like that, even if it was the exact same thing, you're like, okay, it would still be an opportunity for Tesla. But what we're saying is that even though it might look like that at square one, it's fundamentally different. And it's like, you can say, okay, I won't believe it until I see it. And in which case, you know, wait and see. But we should be able to see that, right? Why go 20 vehicles at the start? It's like any Tesla crash gets national news attention before FSD, right? That was just when they were electric and everyone hates on Tesla and electric, even though there's, you know, tens of thousands of accidents and none of them get reported. Anytime there was a fire, Tesla makes national news and you get tons of headlines saying, oh, Teslas aren't safe, even though they're safer and less likely to catch on fire than gas cars. And so you'd have to imagine the exact same thing is going to hold true for autonomous, if not be an even bigger lightning rod. So I think it's like, we should expect any misstep is going to be covered in extreme megaphone media land. And so it's like, start with 10 to 20, make sure it's perfect, learn the operation side of it, right? This is that zero to one step. And then it's like, yeah, it should be much easier for Tesla to go from 20 to 40 than Waymo, right? The fact that Waymo, in theory, has a product that works and they can roll it out, and they're only adding 2,000 vehicles in this coming year is crazy. Waymo's first commercial ride in an autonomous vehicle was in 2018. So now we're 6.5 years later, they have a fleet of 1,500 cars and they're going to add 2,000 cars this year. It's like Tesla literally makes, you know, close to 5,000 cars a day, to Daniel's point. And so, you know, if you do want to take the stance of, oh, let's wait and see, it's like, that's, you know, that is the skeptic's take, and it's acceptable to have that stance. I think there's enough data out there to suggest that even though step one might look similar, they're on two completely separate tracks.
Yeah. Legally speaking, they couldn't even roll this out nationwide in the way that you're trying to describe, right? Like, they have to take this approach, which means they're kind of forced to always just follow in Waymo's footstep. And I understand the point, well, they can deploy more cars at scale than Waymo, which, okay, but they're still going to be hamstrung by which cities and states allow them to actually operate. So you can't actually scale.
Well, Daniel, right? We're going to talk about the recent developments in Trump and Elon land.
Yeah. So firstly, yes, autonomous vehicles are regulated on a state-by-state basis. But there have been, you know, several articles over the last couple of months, call it, of a talk of moving it from state-by-state to federal. So meaning you could kind of copy and paste from one city to another without having to go through the regulatory process for each state. And you can kind of see some movement on that. And in fact, just on Friday, it was reported that in America, to operate a vehicle without a steering wheel and any human controls, you need to get an exemption. And traditionally, that takes a couple of years. But I think it was NHTSA or one of the other safety bodies stated that it's now going to take a couple of months. So you can kind of see that they're already accelerating that process, and there's a bit of tailwind on the regulatory front. And just to caveat that too, so people are aware, it's not purpose-built vehicles that are going to be operating in Austin. These are just standard model-wise coming straight off the production line. That kind of purpose-built is more so 2026 onwards, but there definitely is tailwinds as it relates to the regulatory environment in the US, at least. I know in Europe, it's a bit more difficult to expand in different regions, but there's enough of an addressable market in the United States to kind of satiate demand and to kind of taste over the next couple of months to years, at least. So,
and then I'll just throw this in. This is another key differentiating point between Waymo and Tesla, aside from scale, which obviously, even if you're going city by city, scale matters, right? Mm-hmm. If you launch an SF and then all of a sudden there's 30,000 Teslas versus single thousand or less Waymos, that's fundamentally different, even though it's the same city footprint. But the big difference as well is the ridership model, like being able to opt in a la Airbnb versus Waymo having to partner with Uber, right? And that's because, you know, during the day you get the peak trough demand, so rush hour happening. And so if you're Waymo, you only want as many vehicles as you can utilize efficiently. And so that's like, you know, if the curve is like this, right, you get the morning rush hour here, evening rush hour here, it's like you're going to have a low level of vehicles that are always going to be used, whereas Tesla can have that same level and then incentivize people to put their cars into the fleet during those peak hours. And so that allows kind of a different level of penetration in each market as well.
Do you think that we overweight scale here in being able to deploy a number of vehicles faster? Because was it Uber that gave data on Waymo and how they're utilized 10x more effectively than drivers, which would suggest that you probably don't need as many cars as one would expect to fulfill demand.
Yeah, definitely. Daniel, you take this. I know you and Tasha have done a lot of work on the unit economic side.
Yeah. Even on the vehicle front, like even if you don't need as many vehicles, I mean, there's only so many cities you can do like 2,000, 3,500 vehicles like Waymo has. And before I touch on unit economics, one other thing I'd like to note about scaling cities is, you know, Waymo announced in December, I think, of 2024 that they want to expand to Miami. Those Miami trips aren't starting until some point in 2026. So you're talking about a lag from maybe 12 plus months to announcement to launching in a city. That's going to be a lot faster with Tesla, just given their generalized solution. But yeah, on the unit economics, and credit to Tasha Keeney here, she's done a lot of work on this over the last decade or so. But you know, we think Tesla could be maybe 30 to 40% cheaper on a cost per mile basis relative to Waymo at scale. And that's largely just because of its vertically integrated strategy and fewer sensors. And this is extremely important and somewhat relevant given last week, OBI, I believe, I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but a price comparison app came out with San Fran data. And to Sam's point on Waymo taking share from Uber and Lyft, it found that, you know, on average, a Waymo ride costs 40% more than an Uber and a Lyft. So people are willing to pay more price for an autonomous vehicle. So I don't see why, you know, when Tesla can come in and undercut that price umbrella, why there shouldn't be a significant increase in demand for their service.
And Nick, to your point, that's exactly why you need the opt-in like Airbnb model, is because yes, it's like these vehicles can do far more rides than a human driver, but during rush hour, you can only, it's like if everyone's using a car, each car can only give one ride at a time.
Yeah.
And so it's like the increased utilization matters across the duration of the day, but at the peak point in time, you need to be able to meet that. And maybe, as we wrap up here, this is not to say Waymo is bad, right? Like, yes. Waymo is great. Waymo is better than humans, and it's safer than humans. I think that's like the, to me, the craziest status quo we've accepted. Maybe not the craziest, one of the craziest, is it's like, okay, 40,000 people dying in traffic incidents on the road is the price we're willing to pay to drive cars. That's a crazy thing to accept. And humans are terrible drivers, right? It's like, I take Uber and Lyfts all the time, and half the time the driver's texting or looking at something else, and you're like, okay, you're like, that's fine. Yeah, you know, I'm like, am I getting out of this car? No, you're just like sitting there buckling the seatbelt, holding on. You're like, okay, don't crash. So humans, low bar, autonomous, very good. Waymo, better than humans. And we think Tesla will be less expensive and greater scale than Waymo. Is that a...
My last question for both of you. Do you think the Waymo partnering with Uber strategy is something that Tesla will end up adopting? As in, I know they're trying to go at it alone with their own application. To me personally, I'm taking off my bear hat. This is my actual opinion. I don't think that's the right approach. I don't understand why you wouldn't seed the market on platforms that already have massive distribution. So I'm curious if you think, you know, they'll partner with Lyft or even Uber just to get in front of, you know, the mass market of ride hailers.
I think if we take what we've heard from Tesla so far, it's clear that they currently don't have an intention partnering with Uber. And I think Sam often says this point, and I always echo it. It's like, you know, when I look for an Uber, you open up an Uber app, you open up a Lyft app, and if it's like 10 cents cheaper, I'm going for the cheaper one. If all it takes for me to do is just download the Tesla app and it's like a dollar cheaper, then I think that says all you need to know about consumers. But Sam, I don't know, curious if you disagree with that point, but I'd be very surprised at this stage if Uber partners with Tesla or vice versa.
Yeah, I think Tesla needs to go at it solo, at least at first, and see what the dynamics look like with the Airbnb model. I imagine it will work, and then they don't need to partner. If for some reason it doesn't work, then I think that opens up the door to potential partnership, but I don't think their instinct is to want to partner.
Do we have the data on, like, because in theory we could prove out what you just said, Daniel, and I agree with you, right? But with Waymo, do we know if the majority of the rides today are coming from the Waymo One app or coming from Uber?
I don't know. I'm sure there's data we can go out to find. But I know, like, in some cities, I think it's Phoenix.
It's
maybe
solely through.
Yeah,
some of them
solely
are solely
through.
Yeah.
But I think from my experience with any kind of autonomous companies, like, I've spoken to some autonomous delivery drone companies, and they've told me that, you know, most of their deliveries come directly through their own app relative to someone like Uber or any delivery app. So that's just kind of one incremental data point, but maybe that could be a task we can do and figure that out. But so far it's kind of region dependence.
Yeah.
Nick, I know it's not your natural state to be pessimistic, so we appreciate you putting your bear hat
here.
I took my bear hat off. Whoops, there was another one on.
Yeah, got him.
And these bare hands.
Oh, no.
All right. We'll see everyone next week. Daniel, thank you for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having us, guys.
Thank you, everyone.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other, and therefore, ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARC, and investors should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARC and or show guests and are not endorsements by ARC of any company or security or recommendations by ARC to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARC's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARC assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARC and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARC believes to be reliable. However, ARC does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.